Caught Offside with Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney.
This match is flying by. Bernadeschi's ball in! Cristiano Ronaldo is there yet again against Atletico Madrid. The early stages of the second half. It's into Ronaldo! Saved by Oblak.
What to say? No, it's in. It's over the line.
It's gone over the line and Juventus are level. Here he goes, Bernadeschi down inside the box. Referee has a look. It's a penalty. It's Ronaldo against Oblak. It's three! It's the record-equaling Champions League eighth hat-trick of Cristiano Ronaldo's career.
Oh, yes! Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
It's another one of those Champions League weeks, Champions League podcasts here, where I'm afraid so much happened that I'll forget to talk about something. What a few days it's been.
Oh, this round of 16 was really enjoyable. Now,
some games a little more than others.
Yes, the Manchester City and Barcelona matches wound up being very, very uneventful in its drama. Still, I guess if you're a fan of one of those teams, you might have enjoyed it.
But the narrative of the last few seasons that the knockout rounds are completely bonkers, and that old tropes, like if you have a 2-0 lead going into the next, to the second leg, you're pretty much in the driving seat. That's all gone. Like, those things don't exist anymore.
No lead is safe.
Nothing is really safe.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. That was obviously the Juventus-Atletico Madrid highlights that you heard there from the second leg. We will talk about that, of course, at great length. Also, Liverpool, congratulations to you, or my condolences to you. I don't know how this is being viewed in the Liverpool community. Barcelona over Lyon, Manchester City, Schalke. We'll get to all of it. Also, the U.S. squad for the March friendlies against Ecuador and Chile is out. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, a little bit more interesting than...
Yeah, well, because European players are being brought back into the fold. Obviously, it's going to be more interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting selections, though. I'm a bit surprised by some things.
Which
I will talk about.
Red cards, man of the match. Feel good about both of mine. You're gonna hate my red card. Oh, doctor.
What is that from?
Baseball announcer used to say. Was it Harry Carey?
Oh, doctor.
Or Phil Rizzuto? I don't know. It was in a video game I used to play, and I thought it was from one of those.
Sounds like Peter from Family Guy when he has a catchphrase. That's my mama.
Speaking of Family Guy, actually, we didn't talk about this. And when I say speaking of Family Guy, it's very loose tangentially to that. But did you see Mike Dean's report about Mauricio Pochettino? It was released as to what Pochettino said that caused him to get a two-game touchline.
I actually didn't see that.
Oh.
So I'm hearing this for the first time.
So Pochettino, here we go with another My American Brain. When I hear that a coach is going to be suspended for two games for a way in which he spoke to an official, for what I'm accustomed to that meaning here in the U.S.,
yeah,
that means that he had to have told this guy to just, like, go whatever.
What,
like,
a tirade from you. You're more animal than man. So see how naturally swearing came to you.
But, like, that's what you, like, we've all sat close enough. I feel like I shouldn't say we all, but like if you go to a basketball game.
Where is this going?
Because I saw what it was that Pochettino said. He said, you know what you are. You know what you are. He repeated it several times in what Mike Dean said was an aggressive manner.
Okay.
You don't think that is just
is
like
weak?
For a two-match suspension?
It's open to so much.
First of all,
just physically alone, the way he confronted
you. You're right, and that was part of it.
That's enough. And the second part is, you know what you are is probably worse than anything because it has Mike...
Oh, yeah.
It has...
These harsh words, like daggers.
It has Mike Dean going home going, what am I? And probably the implication is that he's a cheat. And referees can't be called that.
Those words were never uttered. You know what you are. And it made me think of this scene from Family Guy because I feel like my American brain only knows the way that I see coaches treat officials here. But like the polite, like the whole trope of like politeness in Great Britain, it just reminded me of this.
We'll move to England. Worst they got there is, drive-by arguments. I say, Jeremy, isn't that Reginald D. Stiffworth?
Why, yes, I dare say that's the fellow.
Oh, let's get him. Oh, Reginald! I disagree!
That's Mike Dean. Yeah, you know what you are.
Family Guy pushes the narrative of a certain type of Englishman.
I'm
not sure it's real after the weekend's events in Birmingham. I don't think it exists.
Yeah, let's start now with the Champions League, JJ, and we'll start with what you heard at the top of the show there, Juventus and Atletico Madrid.
Oh, that's where we're starting.
I think that was probably the most headline-grabbing match of the week.
It's a curveball, though, when it's not in chronological order on the rundown.
So you think that should take second billing to Liverpool?
No, it should be first billing, but it should appear first menu.
I did this rundown before the Liverpool game happened. I was taking a guess that maybe something
dramatic,
crazy
would happen.
All right. It was a good game. It was a very entertaining game, but it didn't surpass Juventus and Atletico Madrid.
So let's talk Juventus-Atletico Madrid.
Yeah, I guess they went out and backed up their bizarre hype video.
No chance. We're out. We're going to do it. I believe it.
Nothing gets an Italian fan jacked up like a Scottish accent. They did go out and do it, and JJ, it was Cristiano Ronaldo who, I don't want to say went out and did it alone. He scored the three goals. He obviously had help, and we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
But he did rise to the occasion in a way that he has become known for in this competition specifically.
Quite literally, Rose. Two headers.
Yeah.
Absolutely crucial. Here's an interesting stat that, I mean, most people have noticed with the eye test. Duncan Alexander, at Oily Sailor on Twitter, 25 crosses in the first half from Juventus post-Moisian. 25 crosses. That suggests, if someone had said to me before the game, there will be 25 crosses from Juventus in the first half, I'm banking on Godin and Jimenez to be able to deal with that. And that is the key to this game. There's two keys, actually. First of all, if you break down the goals, the three goals, they're stoppable. And you would expect better defending from Atletico Madrid from what we know. And the second key is that Atletico Madrid didn't do anything offensively.
Oh my God, no.
Except that Morata header on 45 minutes.
Yeah.
But that was it. They didn't have a shot on target. That is just supine, spineless, not having a goal. The ultimate show in not having a goal. They never tried a leg offensively and it hurt them ultimately.
I mean, defensively, we typically know what they are and they're having a good season. Defensively.
Yeah, but the idea that they couldn't, you know, try something on the break. First of all,
no, you're right.
To give Juventus their credit, the verve with which they started the game, the intensity was there. That hype video just was injected into their eyeballs. Mm-hmm. And you see straight away the ball that was kicked out of Oblak's hands. It didn't matter that that didn't go into the net. It showed the intention. It showed the intent. And I thought Atleti would weather that storm and work their way into the game in some fashion, and they did not. And they left themselves sitting ducks.
Yeah. With Ronaldo, it is amazing the way he attacks headers.
So true.
He'll go through defenders, but not necessarily in an illegal way. Like, I didn't think he committed any foul on the first one.
No, but if you wanted to talk about the equivalent in basketball of being dunked on, then that's what happened to Juan Fran on the first-headed goal. It's strange because with Ronaldo, we've got this kind of the man with the Adonis body who clearly looks after himself and his blanket. We've seen all the posturing and the posing that he does, but he is extremely aggressive in the box and has become more so as his career has developed. Andrew, Juan Fran has to know that is being hung up there. He's got to know what's behind him and he's got to get to that ball first or attack it. Instead, he gets caught under the flight of it and Ronaldo is just there for the alley-oop. It was pure aggression and drive and will from Ronaldo there. And what really shocked me was that Juan Fran, who is a grizzled, well-tuned, finely-tuned defender who's used to the battles in Champions League football, wasn't ready or expecting that coming from behind.
Yeah. It is amazing, too, speaking of Juan Fran and Atletico Madrid specifically, like they're so good defensively. They have been for this, almost this generation, you'd have to say. It's been long enough now that this has kind of been, you know, the Godin era for them in the back line. And Ronaldo's dominance against them, 33 matches against Atletico Madrid, he scored 25 goals. I mean, like, the way it's he incredible. Rises to the occasion against that team.
Yeah. And even, like, you could have said his his demeanor leaving the Wanda was that, you know, a frustrated guy. With, and some of the words he said, considering they had been beaten 2-0, were unbelievable. You know, he started pointing out how they had no European Cups, etc., etc. But he backed it up. He really backed it up. Now, again, how does Ronaldo get between Jimenez and Godin for Cancelo's cross for the second goal? I can't figure it out, Andrew.
Well,
it just feels like with a cross, he
is able to follow the path of the ball as well as any player I think I've ever seen. And we just talked about the way he attacks headers once he's gotten to it. I mean, I sometimes wonder if it's an element of his game that he doesn't get enough credit for.
Now, how good as well was Allegri in not playing Dybala and playing Bernardeschi in a kind of a free role where he could pop up in all over the place, really, to deliver a cross for the first goal and to deliver a darting run for what ultimately put them through?
Yeah. He drew the penalty late in the match that Ronaldo then finished off. And you're right, he was tremendous in this game. That run in particular, I thought, was maybe his best moment of the game. Obviously, it was so close, too. I mean, it was a penalty. I do believe that it was the right call, but man, it just barely had his foot clipped. But it was enough to go down, and I would say he did the right thing in doing that, because it's now advanced his team on to the quarterfinals.
I think Correa extending the arm into the back just left the referee, kind of made up his mind for him. It looked much worse. Bit surprised. I thought maybe VAR would interject, say maybe you need to have a look at that, but they didn't.
No, so. No. And it is going to be Juventus that goes through, and I do wonder now how dangerous they are moving forward in this competition.
I'm puzzled by them, because I'm wondering, will they go out now and put in that unusual effort again, that amount of crosses into the box, using Ronaldo as some kind of a target man with those darting runs in between to try and create headed chances? Will Dybala come back into the fold and it maybe be a more intricate build-up on the outside of the box? I'm not sure. I won't say I'm not 100... That is a...
I think some of it may depend on the opponent.
Yeah. Maybe I should be more effusive in my praise of them, and maybe I should believe that they are a really serious contender, considering that they have multiple ways to play. They're definitely in there, and if you look at what's left in this Champions League now, how can you not say that they don't have a really good chance of, I was going to say, finally lifting it? Of course they've lifted the European Cup before, but of lifting it in a period where they've come close.
You know, it is amazing to me, though, and we're talking about Bernardeschi and how good he was for Juventus, and I don't mean to oversimplify the sport, but like, it really is incredible sometimes the way one player in what is like such a team game, the way one player can change everything. Like,
well, he picked up the ball and ran.
Yeah, but I can't help but look at, you know, Ronaldo's absence at Real Madrid and how no one has really stepped up to fill that void, and they've paid for it now, and they're out of this competition that they dominated during his time there. Ronaldo goes to Juventus, who bring him in to win this competition. And what does he do? With everything stacked against him, a two-goal deficit against a great defensive-minded team, he scores a hat-trick to advance
to
the quarterfinals.
He only had two goals in the Champions League prior what you're saying is he's clutch. And
yes.
He knows how to win in these positions. And that's where his great strength is. He's absolutely a diminished player from 4 years ago, 2 years ago. That's just time. But he still is clutch in a big spot, and that's all Juventus need right now.
The amazing thing about him, so if you look at the leading scorers in Champions League history, which Ronaldo is, but if you separate Ronaldo into two people, Ronaldo before he turned 30 and Ronaldo since he turned 30, pretend those are two different people.
Yeah.
So Lionel Messi would be the all-time leading Champions League scorer at 106, and then Ronaldo before turning 30 would be second on that list with 72 goals. Ronaldo since turning 30... would be seventh with 52 goals since he turned 30 years old in the Champions League.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
It is amazing. But again, I definitely think that there was a slow... He always scored goals from the wing and from wide positions. We know that. It started at Manchester United.
His game
United,
has changed.
But his game has moved more central. And now you see him... I mean, he was always good in the air, but that is such a weapon right now that he can unlock a defence with Jimenez and Godin and players of that calibre.
Yeah. He is still really, really fun to watch. That was certainly the case here. We move on, JJ, and now we get to Bayern Munich and Liverpool. Oh, I'd like to know how you were reacting when this happened.
Salah. He's looking for Mane! All over now!
Oh, that pass from Salah.
Outside of the boot, yeah. One of the most difficult things to do. And that left foot, he does not want to go with the right. He just wants to hit it with the left all the time.
Hey, if it's working for you.
Oh, absolutely. I wish it worked in the Merseyside Derby, but we'll park that one for the minute. It was unbelievable because the execution of the goal, moments earlier, Salah had a chance to roll Mane in and he would have been in one-on-one. And instead, he decided to take the shot on himself. Well, he didn't take the shot on. He carried it into the box. Maybe he was fouled. I don't know. But the pass was open. So when I saw him pick out a much more difficult cross/pass, I was like, oh, that's unbelievable. But Liverpool were, if I'm being honest, and I tweeted this out, Liverpool have had tougher games against Leicester. They've had tougher games against West Ham. This Bayern Munich side is in momentous decline.
Which is weird because... Like, you're saying that in a time when they won 6-0 over the weekend and just climbed themselves right back to the top of the table in the Bundesliga.
It's not that weird.
Oh.
It's not that weird. You can still be a domestic...
I'm saying they've been on the incline if we look at, like...
Domestically, but there was... I mean, I remember there was an Alex Ferguson team, was it 0-2, 0-3, or one of those teams where... 0-1, 0-2, where they looked, definitely... were in a climb in the league, still looked dominant, but in Europe they were struggling. Mm-hmm. And this is a team that's struggling in Bayern Munich. And honestly, Andrew, like I said, Liverpool domestically have had tougher games. You remember the first leg, there was that period where Gnabry was getting in behind Roberts and you're like, why don't you just keep hitting that diagonal ball and put him in? And tonight for the equaliser, that's exactly what Munich did. And they didn't do it again for the rest of the game. You know, you have, they started with Ribery, but you have Coleman and you have Gnabry in wide positions against two wing backs for Liverpool who like to push on, who are dangerous in doing that, who leave space in behind. And Munich couldn't manage anything. They had a midfield with Alcantara and they had James Rodriguez in there, just and Martinez too, just one-paced, didn't win tackles, didn't get the ball out wide, didn't do anything. They were bested by a Liverpool that was on the fly, had to be repaired when Henderson went off and Fabinho came in. Just poor. And Miguel Delaney made a point, they've got some players who aren't good enough to be at Bayern Munich and they've got some stars who aren't good enough as stars to be there. And you look at the tepid response by Rummenigge to James Rodriguez playing. He's made no impact in two legs.
Yeah, it's for Bayern Munich... It is their first time not advancing to the quarterfinals of this competition since 2010-2011. I do understand what you're saying in the greater scheme of things if they are now a side that is in decline. Like, not within the scope of this of the way the season is going right now, but, like, overall, a lot of these names that we've gotten so used to over the years.
Yeah.
Was it Mane's? Oh, no, I think it was the Van Dijk goal, the second goal.
The header.
Like, the way he just overpowered Mats Hummels.
Yeah.
Like, it was no con. I mean, Van Dijk was clearly the most powerful guy on the field.
Now, Hummels had a fine game at Anfield. I still think it was a midfield issue. I don't like that Munich midfield. I don't think they played to their strengths enough. They certainly did not pin back our two fullbacks. Also, Andrew, you know, you start out the game and you realise it's 0-0. You're aware that you have got the 0-0 at Anfield. You're also aware you are on a tightrope when you're at home in the second leg. You cannot, and you have no away goal yourself.
Yeah, the fear of allowing the away goal has to weigh heavily
right.
On a home team in a 0-0.
So Virgil van Dijk has the ball. There's nothing on ahead of him except Mane, who makes an in-out run and cuts inside, gets wrong side of the defender. It's a long ball. And your experienced World Cup winning goalkeeper just comes rushing out for no reason. Now, the first touch by Mane, the way he then executed the little dink into the back of the net, great. But if Neuer stays at home and lets the defenders deal with it, it's no problem.
Well, it was... You're right. You're 100% right. Neuer, he probably should know better. He's like, if you're going to hold him in the regard that we hold him to be, then he should kind of recognize the situation better. Now, the flip side of that is it's Manuel Neuer. What is he known for? Sweeper keeper. Like, you do kind of live and die with him acting that way in net, and this is one of those moments, unfortunately.
But that's usually with the higher line. That ball was right in behind on the edge of the box.
He made a mistake.
Yeah,
he made a mistake, but I'm saying his mentality is going to be aggressive. Aggressive, like, oh, I think I can get to this, and then by the time he realizes he can't,
it's just bad
play. Too late. And it, also, too, I don't want to downplay Sadio Mane's role in that.
Yeah,
like,
okay.
Yeah, okay, good finish. Yada, yada. There's a defender on him, and there's Manuel Neuer, who's like attacking him, and he manages to avert both guys and finish delicately enough that he kind of places it in the corner. It was a really, really good job by him, too.
You're absolutely right, and I know there's been calls from this from some of our fans on Twitter who want the proper football man to come back, but proper football man would say things like, first off, right, keep it nice and tight. Keep it nice and tight, no mistakes. Don't need your goalkeeper running out for that. You just don't need it. What?
You know, so a proper football man is anti-sweeper keeper.
Proper football man would not want his team to be exposed by a long ball out of the back, however good the pass may have been. And it wasn't even that good.
I feel like proper football man, like when I say it, I think of like some kind of really lame soccer superhero. Proper football man who swoops in
but
to
he's
like
got
a, but, share his lame analysis of a fun situation.
But he's got a sheepskin coat on and he's also got a bit of a beer belly.
Okay.
Yeah. So think of Terry Venables in the late 80s.
So that's who you are picturing.
Yeah, Terry Venables and Ron Atkinson have a child. That's who it is.
Nice.
I should say as well, Bayern just on the chances they created, they never caught Liverpool open. One chance in the second half where strangely, Andrew, Gnabry gets in behind, delivers a cross, and Lewandowski is that close to connecting, who was pretty much handled by Van Dijk and Matip all night long. Now, apart from obviously Matip's own goal. Brandon McCarthy is a pitcher. I don't know who he's pitching with right now.
He's known kind of as a Dodger, although you're right, I don't know
who he's with. But yeah. He's a massive Red. Great follow on Twitter. Huge Liverpool fan. And he's tweeting, please take Gnabry off, because he sees the danger of that diagonal ball in behind Robertson. Please take him off.
Yeah.
He's hoping for that. How is it that none of the protagonists on the field for Munich can see that and start hitting those balls? It was pathetic.
Yeah. In the end, Liverpool, I know stats can be somewhat deceiving, but they outshoot Bayern Munich 10-7.
Oh, not
shots on target, 6-2 in favor of Liverpool.
Not shocking.
Yeah. They were the better side. There's no question about it. I think that bore out over these 90 minutes.
Now, a quick damage report. Henderson rolls his ankle. We don't know how bad it is. He had to come off, so it's significant. And Robertson, a tackle late on that he didn't need to make, and that was a yellow, which has him automatically suspended for the first leg of the next game.
It could hurt them, but again, they were without Virgil van Dijk for the first leg of this tie against Bayern Munich, and they were able to survive that. So we'll see. Right now, I think highly enough of Liverpool, and again, a lot of this will change on Friday when we find out what the draw actually will be.
For the quarterfinal and the semifinal,
yeah.
Which is, this one passed me by.
What, the double draw?
That completely passed me by.
Like, what? You didn't know this was coming, you mean?
No, I didn't know they were doing it this way. I'm not sure if I like it.
I'd say I'm totally neutral on it. I'm not going to fake an opinion one way or another. It is interesting to see, you know, Bayern out, Real Madrid out, like two sides that are just staples of the quarterfinals, the semifinals, the final even. You know, you could say throw PSG into that group. I mean, not that they're staples beyond the round of 16, but like high-profile clubs. I don't know. It feels I don't know about changing of the guard. Barcelona's still there. But some of the old guard that you're used to not advancing, I think it could set up a really interesting final eight.
Let's be fair. Of late, this is Bayern Munich going out a little bit earlier than they have done. They've been semi-finalists.
Well, yeah, like I just said, the snaps a streak since 10-11.
Right, you're right. And they've always kind of been there, but often they haven't been good. So,
let's see. We continue now. Barcelona and Lyon. 5-1. It goes to the Catalan side. Lionel Messi, I guess, doing the best that he can. When Ronaldo has a big performance the day before, like to me, that is not lost on Messi. And he goes out and he was brilliant. God, the second goal that he scored, where the ball is just like, can you think of anyone that you've seen, JJ, better than Messi at making you think that the ball is stuck to his foot?
Oh, it's really tough. The early videos, I was going to say the early videos of George Best, yeah, but actually Maradona. That's the only other one.
Well, that's good company.
Yeah, and that's his main rival for the affections of the Argentinian nation, but it's definitely him.
And Messi did one of my favorite things today.
Panenka!
Oh, did he ever.
Panenka!
It was cruel. When you get a keeper on that, it's emasculating, it's humiliating.
It is.
It is just like... You feel bad for the keeper.
You do. Rory Smith, I think, tweeted that maybe keepers should just stand up a little bit longer or wait much longer than they do, as he reckons 1 in 5 penalties now are Panenka's.
No.
Are a variation on Panenka.
Well, a variation meaning what? Just a shot down the middle?
Yeah.
All right. If you consider that to be a variation of Panenka, then fine, maybe. But I used to try it in FIFA in the video game. Oh, JJ. The only thing more emasculating than Panenka-ing a goalkeeper is when he doesn't move. And he just catches it.
Yeah, on a computer game.
Oh, then you have
and
to
the computer
there.
Game almost glitches because it's not really ready for such a terrible...
And you can feel the PlayStation laughing at you.
Oh, yeah. You almost have to turn it off and
the humiliation
and leave the room.
Oh, God. But yeah, Barcelona looked back to themselves after the 0-0 in France against Lyon in the first leg. Like I said, Messi was brilliant. I thought Luis Suarez was great.
Suarez had a nutmeg in the game. Did you see that? Oh, he's run over the ball himself and allowed it to go through his legs and subsequently through the Lyon defender behind him. And it was vicious. It was wrong. That man has a wife and a family he's got to return to.
They still are, I don't know, soccer has changed the way, what we deem to be good football. It changes periodically, but something about Barcelona, when they are playing their style and they are at their best, they're just so fun to watch. The quick passing, quick movement, Messi doing his thing. They still probably are my favorite team to watch.
That front three of Messi, Suarez, and Coutinho, and behind them, then Busquets, Rakitic, and then further back, Piqué, Jordi Alba on the left-hand side as well. That's a nice spine of really talented players.
Yeah, I would agree. Barcelona now, they extend their home unbeaten run in the Champions League. And it is now they were tied for the longest streak at 29 straight home games unbeaten. Now they are alone atop that list with 30 straight unbeaten at home in the Champions League. That is really impressive. Not shocking, I guess I would say, but...
It's quite something.
It is. And then last but not least, Manchester City and Schalke, 7-0 on the night. Jeez. Dear God. And 10-2 overall. I will have more on this a little bit later in the show, but we can still talk about it now. I was curious.
Is yours fan-related?
No.
Right. You saw the Schalke players go down to the fans at the end to do the clap-off. Do you know what? It's interesting. They basically, so for anyone who hasn't seen it, the Schalke players did the usual... clap above the head, but they went right down to the fans, as German teams tend to do.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of the last days of, I believe, Jurgen Klopp. Remember Dortmund went through this crazy season where they were like 6th or 7th?
Yeah, I remember the players pleading with the fans to
stick
not hate
with,
them.
Stick with us. And Mats Hummels was still at the club, and he got up on the fence, and he's like having a conversation with the guys of the Yellow Wall. And I just thought that kind of accountability... was really, really endearing to me. And I don't see it in England anymore. And I don't see it in Spain even. Not amongst the big clubs. And the same thing happened with Schalke. But there was no dialogue. There was just angry people who'd spent a ton of money to come to Manchester to watch the game all the way from Germany. And their faces. There was one guy who was just like, you... just staring back. And in fairness to the players, they took it. Now, it got thrown back to the studio, and Kate Abdo was of a like mind with me. She said, I actually like that. I like that level of accountability. Stu Holden agreed. Tim Howard did not. He said, you paid to see the game. You did not pay to win.
I get his point, but for a guy who hate on that...
I don't.
Is a strange tack to take.
Look, the players put in a dire performance. They are putting in dire performances in the Bundesliga.
Well, that is the only, in a weird way, that is like the only thing that I would say in Schalke's defense. Like, okay, you shouldn't be losing 7-0, obviously.
And by the way, that's the only defense you can associate with Schalke.
Like, you shouldn't be losing 7-0. I don't care who you're playing. You are in the Champions League, but you're not a Champions League club. They're 14th in the German league right now.
Yeah, and just points above the drop zone. Domenico Tedesco, I don't know what he does with that team, but I'll tell you what he did do, which was kind of unfair. Weston McKennie was again jettisoned into play a position that I'm not sure he would like to fulfill his. He's fast becoming the John O'Shea of the U.S. men's national team.
I remember John O'Shea, on any given day, could be the center back or the striker.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He was a man for all seasons.
Right.
And you had a guy not so long ago at Spurs, about 11 years ago, Gary Doherty, who also played center back and center forward, depending on where Spurs had a need. Now, to quote the great Joe Girardi, it's not what you want.
No, it's not what you want.
And McKennie got caught out. But, well, okay, let me lay this up for you. I wasn't watching the game, so I watched the highlights. And I'm seeing tweets, oh, McKennie's got skinned by Sané for that third goal. I look at it. McKennie is on an island on his own. He gets wrong side, sure. Every other Schalke defender isn't in the same zip code.
Yeah.
They've completely stitched him up. Schalke were a shambles.
Leroy Sané was so good in this game. When a team scores seven goals, I think it's fair to ask which was your favorite.
No, I didn't have a favorite.
Oh.
I didn't.
I suppose that's a fun answer to an enjoyable question.
Sorry. Yeah, I can't think.
I would say the fourth.
Which was, remind me again?
Sané makes just such a cool kind of looping pass to Raheem Sterling, who catches it on the half volley and just smacks the hell out of
it.
Oh,
that one will, yeah, that, well, that,
oh,
stand,
a great one.
That stood out. I'll take that one.
The third one, I think it was when, yeah, because Aguero scored the first two. Actually, Aguero's first goal.
Panenka!
Yeah, they were everywhere.
I love the way we don't use the actual highlight footage of Panenka scoring
this
that.
This is how every announcer is contractually obligated to call it.
Panenka!
Panenka scored after Czechoslovakia against East Germany in the European Championship final, but no.
That's it.
No.
No, Sané, the third goal scored by Manchester City in this game, the ball from Zinchenko in behind the defender. Sané, great finish into the far corner. He's, like, I don't know. When I watch Manchester City play, the more I watch them, the more and more I just fall in love with Leroy Sané's game, and it just, like, continues to boggle my mind that sometimes he, like, managers have a hard time with him. Not brought to the World Cup for Germany, started the year kind of in the doghouse for Pep.
Blanked me at Manchester City training.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? Did I tell you about that?
Wait, what?
He blanked me. Oh, my God. It was awful. I wanted the ground to open up. So remember at Manchester City training, their preseason training camp in New York, in Orangeburg. Uh-huh. So I played a, frankly, wonderfully weighted pass out to Pep Guardiola, who controlled
it,
and dribbled it.
Yeah, all about it.
So I'm walking back towards the, I suppose, the training center, and a ball rolls in front of me, and Sané is just finished his training session, and he's on his way back to the center, and the ball comes across to me. So I shout, Leroy, and I ping another, frankly, beautiful pass to him, and he just steps over it, but never looks at me. Never acknowledges, just steps over it and keeps walking.
Good for him. You could use being taken down a peg every once in a while. We've spoken a lot about Liverpool and how they are prioritizing the league over the Champions League.
Well, we haven't spoken that they're doing that.
We presume that to be the case. The fans are doing that. The club is not.
Klopp is not doing
that. The fans,
that.
The fan base.
Come on.
All right, relax. But what about Manchester City?
Relax. You're accusing Klopp of something.
Do you think Manchester City fans have the opposite view?
But believe it or not, I genuinely take at face value Pep saying it is game by game. Like what he was saying last season, you know, the way he'd talk up, he'd go, guys, Crystal Palace. Yeah. It's a wonderful team that pass the ball. Guys, we got to be serious. I believe that it's game for game. I believe when he looked at the schedule and saw Wigan, guys, Wigan, important. I believe that. But I believe the board, or rather the United Arab Emirates, the people in the Emirates, they are solely, almost exclusively looking at the Champions League.
I think that if we're talking about what the board expects, don't stop there. They probably look at the money that they've poured into this club.
The World League?
No, the Quad. I think they believe, why can't we win everything? They've already got one trophy ticked off their box. The FA Cup, they'll coast to that.
Well, the investigation has been launched,
so they better,
by football, would suggest that
they got to strike while the iron's hot.
Yep.
There you go, JJ. That is our look at the UEFA Champions League round of 16. I'm very excited for the draw on Friday. One thing that I don't know if I could actually handle is if Tottenham and Liverpool are drawn against one another, and
the rap battle comes for the Champions League.
And if Spurs were to lose that, I don't know I don't know about sitting here with you because I know how you can be and I know how I am. My feelings. I'm very feelings oriented.
We should watch it together.
Oh, my God. That is honestly one of the worst ideas I think you've ever had on this show. So, yeah, I don't know who it is I want to see Tottenham drawn against. I think every team remaining is dangerous. Obviously, I'd rather it not be Barcelona.
It's going to be Barcelona.
But, yeah, I'm very excited. Very excited about Friday's draw.
I am, too. I think it's 2008 or 2009, 08-09 season since there's been four teams at this stage of the Champions League from England.
Changing up the guard. Mm. I mean, this is... Remember all those years ago when we did the Nicolas Cage thing about the Premier League is a Nicolas Cage movie because it's wildly entertaining, but it's laughably bad?
Yeah.
I don't think that's the case anymore.
I think a lot of the examples we gave were Stoke City, West Brom related.
About the
Nicolas Cage show that we did.
I remember something about Mario Balotelli being in there. It was a long time ago. We were different people then. I'll tell you what, we're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, the U.S. squad is out for the upcoming friendlies for the men's team. Some interesting things on there that I know you had me intrigued at the start of the show. I don't know where you're going
to
go with it.
I think most people who know me will know my mode of attack, but yet they'll want to hear it.
I actually have no idea.
They'll know
so
the route.
If you're even mildly interested in that, I would say don't go anywhere. We've got plenty more to go.
Aguero scores. Stumbled by Aguero. Second goal for Sergio Aguero. Leroy Sané. It's a magnificent finish. Towards Sterling. It's a sensational finish. Sané. Been put in by Bernardo Silva. Foden. Past Vernon. Jesus.
And Messi. Oh, my goodness. Suarez. Oh, lovely control. 2-0. Oh, he most certainly can. And he scores. In the pass for Piqué. Absolutely fabulous. Ousmane Dembélé. Barcelona hit 5.
Caught offside, a look back at the 12 goals scored in total by Manchester City and Barcelona.
Yeah, a bit of Weezer.
Yeah.
I thought a nice, relaxed summer song, because it was a walk on the beach for those teams.
Yeah, the Barcelona one, it got hairy for a little bit.
Yeah, but not really.
Well, all right. I don't know. 2-1 would frighten me a little bit in a Champions League match where it was 0-0 coming in. But I guess have it your way. That Weezer album always disappointed me. I'm not going to lie.
Did it disappoint
you? The Green album?
So,
here's the deal.
It had Hash Pipe on it, which was a great song.
Their first two albums, the Blue Album and Pinkerton, were, for me, at like my age, that was just like life-changing for me.
Buddy Holly was a great song.
Oh, the Sweater song, Say It Ain't So, Only in Dreams, phenomenal stuff.
Right.
And I don't know, the Green Album was just such a... I thought it came up so short because there were so many years between Pinkerton and the Green Album. So the hype was building. Oh my God, Weezer's coming out with a new album. And I thought every song just like followed the same template. Like words, 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 a guitar solo in the tune of the words, back to words, 2.5, 3 minute song.
Formulaic.
Yeah. Formulaic.
I would have to go... I regularly go and challenge myself. On an album that I liked, I go to Pitchfork Media, which has a ton of archived reviews.
Okay.
Pitchfork, they go deep on their reviews.
Maybe I'm being too harsh.
I don't know. I'll have to check their review for that.
And I continued to like them after that, but that was always like a bit of a turning point for me. Album.
Hashpipe was a scorcher, though.
Okay. Well, I would hope that they have one song on an album that you enjoyed.
Well, back in the day, what was the rule? You had to have 3 singles. If an A&R man saw your list of songs and there was only 3, there was less than 3 singles, then they wouldn't put the album out.
Who decides what qualifies as a single? Like they just...
I get the band generally do.
Okay.
The band will say
they'll say these are our hits off of this album, now it's up to you to decide.
But the record
right.
company can veto them. It depends how powerful they are. Like Metallica, I would say, towards the middle of their career were dictating singles and stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't know.
It doesn't matter. And the singles don't matter now.
Yeah, everything's changed.
Well, everything's a single now. You go into an album that you really like and enough people play that song from that album, that becomes a single on the download chart.
Yeah. JJ, the U.S. squad is out for their upcoming friendlies against Ecuador and Chile. What is it, March 21st and March 26th, I think, are the two. Look, I'm not going to go through every single name on here, so I'll just kind of ask you what stands out to you about this group.
I'll start at the back. Goalkeeper wise, if I'm picking a goalkeeper from New York, it's not Sean Johnson. Okay. I would have picked Luis Robles. I think he's due a turn. He's long overdue a turn, a run in the side. And we'll talk about Red Bulls later. But Sean Johnson consistently, New York City fans love him. I do not. I don't rate him as highly as Luis Robles. But maybe that's a minor quibble.
Well, I think that is because I think honestly you're. Like
he's third choice.
Horvath and Stefan are ahead.
Right,
so.
They're competing for the number one spot, and I mean, I suppose it's interesting that Guzan is now being jettisoned.
Yes, to me, that's more interesting than Luis Robles not being.
Well, no, but if I was to bring someone in,
Luis Robles, by the way, is 34.
I know, but we know how goalkeepers work.
All right, but
it's not. He's in his peak years.
I don't know exactly if that's true.
Well, I don't know.
I'm not saying he's like. Done as a player, certainly, but like to say that that's
maybe
in his peak years.
Maybe,
I don't know.
Okay, maybe I'm being New York centric here. I looked at a New York goalkeeper and I thought it should be the other one. But what's interesting is Guzan being out, and you're right. The real challenge is between Zach Steffen and Ethan Horvath. That is the interesting thing. But really, for me, I would have brought Josh Sargent and Tim Weah. I would have liked to have seen them play in a team with Pulisic in the side. Not both games, but maybe one game where you've got your full deck. Why not do that?
Well, Greg Berhalter was asked about that.
Yes, and I know the answer he's going to give.
Do you?
Well, is it about the under-23s?
Yeah, I think he wants them playing with the Olympic team and get that team qualified for the Olympics. So
I mean, okay.
Yeah, look, I would agree. It was kind of a bummer when I didn't see those names on there, and it makes me wonder about whether or not they'll be part of the Gold Cup team this summer, which I really, really strongly feel they should.
Yes, I do. Me too, as well. And I just thought that it was an opportunity. See your full strength hand. See what it is and play them. Also, it'd be really nice for the fan base after your opening camp gave a little bit of positivity, but then everyone's going, that's just MLS players. Now you got everybody together. Put them all out together.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. That was a little bit of a bummer.
Corey Baird and Jonathan Lewis. Corey Baird, 8 goals last season. Okay, fine. Jonathan Lewis, not even a regular starter for NYCFC.
No, but I think that there's underwhelming. There's a feeling about him that he's kind of ready to be this next young player who really emerges. I'm curious. I wasn't bummed when I saw that. Corey Baird, I thought, was maybe kind of like a nod to a guy who had a good January camp. Maybe for the U.S. Here's what stood out to me that I thought was interesting. JJ, Tim Ream and Omar Gonzalez, both back in the fold. Like, I don't know. We hadn't seen Omar Gonzalez with the U.S. team since the game, since the own goal against Trinidad on that,
Fateful night in the long grass.
This was from Philly.com in an article about the team. It says, by the 2022 World Cup, Ream will be 35 and Gonzalez 34. Gonzalez has not played for the U.S. since the loss at Trinidad and Reims since the September 2017 home defeat to Costa Rica, the most significant stumble that led to the qualification failure. So I can only look at that and say I have no idea what their role is going to be in terms of on the field. But Greg Berhalter is trying to set some kind of a tone with this team. And I look at those names, guys who have been around the program, who have achieved a lot at club level and have are well-capped as well. I just wonder if this is a leadership move, if these are just like good guys to have around this young core of players that he's trying to mold to be a certain type of way. And so I just wonder if maybe that's the goal with something like that.
Well, that's a premier, like in Tim Ream, for example, that's a Premier League defender, however poor he's been this season, however poor the team he's been in this season. Last season, it's not even a year since he was voted into the championship team of the year.
He was named as their player of the year, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. So you want to see where he's at, and I understand that. You also, that's a nod to maybe saying, hey, I started out January camp with Walker Zimmerman and Aaron Long at centre-back. That's, maybe I need to look at my options.
Maybe, although I didn't think those guys flunked by any means.
No, I thought they were good, but.
Well, and some of the other options too. Matt Miazga back in the side. John Brooks back in the side. I still am curious.
Miazga and Brooks, I would like to see together.
Yeah, so would I. And I really wonder, is that going to be his top-notch center-back pairing? I think John Brooks definitely. But I don't know if Matt Miazga. I think this season hasn't gone the way domestically that he would have hoped it would. He's moved around from France back to England.
But at least he got a run with Reading. You know, he wasn't getting, I mean, he fell completely out of favor.
But there's, to me, it feels like there's a spot there that is up, kind of up for grabs.
I think so too. And even John Brooks, we keep saying it, he's had a few nightmares for the US too. So what we thought were cemented center back positions are definitely up for grabs. Yeah. And I am
his
not,
spot, I think, is more cemented to me than the other
well,
one.
I'm not saying you couldn't see Brooks and Walker Zimmerman together or some variation on that. I don't know. I'm just a little bit disappointed.
You're disappointed?
Just disappointed in the forward line.
Well, and we haven't even mentioned the midfield yet, which I think is where most people's eyeballs went right away when they saw the future, JJ. The future is now. With Pulisic, McKennie, and Adams all included on the team.
Because what Adams is doing at Leipzig isn't goal scoring, and for those people who don't generally tune in to the Bundesliga, he's been excellent, absolutely excellent, and has settled in there as if he's been playing at that level all his career. So it's really exciting to have him in the squad. Again, just looking at Germany, Alfredo Morelos has only missed one game since the start of the season for Fortuna Dusseldorf. Mm-hmm. Would you not want to look at him? Is there, you know,
fair?
There's Will Trapp in there, and I'm not saying he's playing favourites, but he knows Trapp well. So Trapp's going to be in the squad, but like Sebastian Legette, could you not?
Deserves a chance to be on this team. Mm. Every time he gets a chance, he makes the most of it. And I think the injury was so unfortunate. He came back in the January camp and played really well. I want to see him get a run. He's somebody that piques my curiosity when he gets a chance.
He could easily have pushed Pulisic into the forwards.
Well,
dropped a forward, taking Baird or Jonathan Lewis out and brought Morales.
Here's what Bearhalter says the roles of Pulisic, McKennie, and Adams could very well be. This is from Jeff Carlisle's article. He says, Pulisic will be deployed as the number 10 slanted to the left. It looks as if Adams could play the right back or holding midfielder hybrid position occupied by Nick Lima during the January camp. Though a more central role wasn't ruled out, that would leave McKennie to either occupy the right-sided number 10 slot or play in a more of a holding role.
McKennie is a right-sided number 10.
No?
Don't see it. I'm nixing that one straight away.
So to
I'd want him
so
deeper.
You, he's the holding role that they also say he could potentially be.
That would be my choice anyway.
Well, Michael Bradley's going to play all these positions, so it doesn't even matter.
Yeah, it's curious. I'll be interested to see what he comes up with, and those games have a bit of spice for me.
Yeah, I'm excited simply because, like, for me now, we're at a point where Christian Pulisic is box office when he's wearing the U.S. shirt. Like, when I know he's playing for the U.S., I can't help it. I'm just excited because I'm so pumped about, you know, even if this season hasn't gone as planned for him, just, like, I have so much pride in him as this, like, next great player for the American team. So if he's out there, man, I'm in. I'm in all in for sure. What to watch for?
Yes, please.
CONCACAF Champions League Thursday, 8 o'clock, Sporting KC and Independiente. It is not going well right now here in the quarterfinals.
Yes, I watched the full 90 of the Red Bulls versus Santos Laguna.
They're up 2-0. This could get interesting.
They started so quickly. They played excellently for about, I don't know, I guess 25 minutes. Mm. And it slipped away from them and they allowed Santos Laguna back into the game. But it was just, again, someone criticized me on Twitter a few days back about always mocking MLS. And I don't mock MLS. What I do, if anything, is pay probably too much attention when a goal is scored to the defending that goes on. And I should probably just enjoy the goal more. But the defending really let the Red Bulls down last night. And they invited, they sucker punched Santos Laguna. They hit them in the face early with those two goals. And the second goal was really good from Royer. And I thought, you know, they can go on. They've got themselves parity. They're back in the game now. Plus, they have the advantage of the away goal. They are away from home now.
Yeah.
Just be compact, catch them on the break. And again, they got cut open a couple of times. The first goal that was scored, all the Red Bulls defenders congregate in the middle of the, outside the D, and the ball is played out wide, and no one is marking the Santos Laguna player who buries it into the top corner. And after that, Andrew, it was downhill.
Yeah.
And Santos Laguna's Brian Lozano had an unbelievable second half, including a goal from inside his own half, which It was pretty special. I watched that game on Galavision.
Oh, one of my favorite networks.
And prior to that, I watched a very interesting Mexican soap opera.
Oh, really?
Oh, very good.
Do you speak? You don't speak Spanish.
No, but I could follow it.
Really? Yeah. Okay, tell me what happened.
All I know is...
So that when you start off with that, you don't know.
Somebody's cheating on someone. All right? And I have a feeling it was one of the characters in the big hats.
Ah, I see.
Who was doing it.
By the way, Atlanta United FC and Monterrey are playing as we speak. It's the 26th minute.
Okay.
The score. Remember, Atlanta come in down 3 goals.
Yes.
It's 0-0.
Okay.
So there you go.
Yeah, it's disappointing. Someone asked, was it embarrassing for the league for these results to keep happening? I don't think the league takes it as embarrassment. I don't. Because
no, I think that's a little bit unfair to cast aspersions on the whole league on how these teams do.
I wouldn't cast aspersions, but I would say that this happens at the start of every season and it gets brushed under the carpet quickly.
Well, you know what? I say cast aspersions, but that's not really fair for me to say because I'd be the first person championing MLS if this was going differently.
Yeah.
If they put 4 teams into like the last 4 of this competition,
I'd be high-fiving
everyone out on the
streets. Last season when Toronto got all the way to the final, is this the greatest American team we've ever seen?
I never said that.
Oh my God.
I said we need to see the full body of work before we judge. That is wrong that you said that just now.
Sorry.
Europa League, JJ, Thursday, 1:55, the earlier time. Dynamo Kiev and Chelsea. Chelsea are not happy heading into this one. First off, they're up 3 goals, which they're happy about that.
Yeah.
But they're not happy with the quality of the pitch. Maurizio Sarri has described the Olympic Stadium pitch as a, quote, disaster and, quote, very dangerous ahead of Chelsea's Europa League tie against Dynamo Kiev. With the visitors to consider making an official complaint to UEFA over the state of the playing
What's
surface.
What's the problem?
They think it's dangerous and it's a disaster. That's what Sarri said. I don't know.
I mean, Was it Tottenham? No, Manchester City and Tottenham have both played at Newport County in the last 12 months. So.
Yeah. Also bad.
Get on with it.
I wonder what they'll do here. Hopefully they'll just play this game and you know, not make a big thing out of it. But
I did not hear of these complaints.
Yeah, but if this game happens and a bunch of players go down with some kind with, you know, injuries and
did they say specifically what was wrong with it?
I'm reading now. This is from The Guardian.
By the way,
I have it in front of me.
This is the Olympic Stadium.
Yeah.
Where I was.
Huh?
It's a pretty good surface.
Things have happened since you were last there. You're hardly an expert on this. I'm sorry. Let's see. In The Guardian, it says there are muddy patches dotted around the uneven surface, a legacy of the harsh Ukrainian winter, and fears that areas of the pitch watered prior to the game will freeze as temperatures plummet around the 8 o'clock kickoff, making it even more treacherous.
Okay.
Here's what Sarri said. Like I said, quote, it's a disaster. The pitch is not good. I think it's dangerous, really dangerous. It's really dangerous to play any football here in this moment, and I think it's really very dangerous for injuries. But the situation is this, so we have to accept the situation. We have to play on this pitch. I don't know the reason it's so bad, probably the winter. It's a problem for us, but also for our opponents, I think. I played here 2 years ago with Napoli, and the pitch was wonderful. I think it will be very difficult also for Dynamo because the pitch is no good. So at least he says this is not a Chelsea issue. We're all going to have to kind of suffer through this. But if there's ice patches throughout the course of the field, yeah, okay, if I'm Maurizio Sarri and I know back home when I come back to England I'm in a battle for the top four, I could understand some concern over that.
I mean, it looks fine. It's not like one of those articles where you dig up the – well, this is from the Evening Standard.
That picture also is not really a wide scope of the field.
No, it doesn't. Chelsea are doing some drills in the corner of the field. I don't know.
We'll see. Thursday, 4 o'clock, Arsenal and Stade Rennes. 3-1. Arsenal trailing as it goes back to the Emirates. I still think they will advance. That one away goal could... they can win that 2-0. Right?
Yeah. They can, but Stade Rennes are... They gave Cannes a clipping at the weekend. And if you go just through some of their personnel, they have Ismail Sarr, who we talked about prior to the World Cup, who's an excellent winger. They have Hatem Ben Arfa, who... we all know about.
Yeah.
Borrego in midfield. This is a centre midfielder player. He's about 25 years old, I think. Decent player. Scored a free kick at the weekend. Nobody expected, because of their position in Ligue 1, for them to do what they did to Arsenal. But we know how bad that Arsenal defence was. And it was terrible that night. So they need the Arsenal defending that they had at the weekend against Manchester United, or the same amount of luck. to get through this one.
Wow. A little bit of Premier League to get through here. Sunday, 10:15, Fulham and Liverpool. And Sunday at 12:30, Everton and Chelsea. Should be fun matches.
St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, that's fun. The reason there's not a ton of EPL to discuss is because it's also an FA Cup weekend. Saturday, 8:15 a.m.
No. Hit the magic drop. You have to.
All right. Saturday, 8:15 a.m., Watford and Crystal Palace. Saturday, 1:20, Swansea City welcomes Manchester City. Kind of a nice soft landing spot for Manchester City after a midweek Champions League
fixture. Swansea are in absolute turmoil.
Saturday, 3:55, Wolves and Manchester United, which would have me worried if I was Manchester United. That is at Wolves. And Sunday, 10 a.m., Millwall and Brighton.
Brighton go to Millwall to the Den.
Yeah.
Tricky, tricky fixture for Chris Hughton's men.
Yeah. I wonder how this is all shaping up. I mean, on paper, you look at this and say City and United are headed towards some kind of ultimate clash between Manchester clubs. But I don't know. I feel like that there's another twist in here. The easy one to say is Wolves over Manchester United. But
that would be your magic upset, would it?
Well, no, that's hardly a magic upset. Wolves have been tremendous against the top six this season. The magic upset is Swansea and Manchester City. But I'm not predicting that because I don't believe that's going to happen. And I'm nothing if not honest. JJ, we bring it down the stretch now.
Red card.
You want to go first?
Yeah, I'll go quickly. This is a quick one. Yeah. The FAI Awards are coming up.
This is bad. This is embarrassing.
Yeah, and they've announced the honorees for this year's gala event. And they've decided in their wisdom to announce that Declan Rice is Ireland's Young Player of the Year for 2018. In the same week that Declan Rice has been called up to the English squad by Gareth Southgate for the first time. Now, I understand that this was voted for by a straw poll of journalists. In 2018, Ireland were terrible. There's no doubt that Declan Rice was probably our best player across the three friendlies, senior internationals that he played in. There's no question. But you don't have to stick to that. You don't have to embarrass yourself ahead of your new manager squad announcement in the same week of it, actually. You don't have to emasculate yourself in front of the world's media and the English media by sticking with this decision. Why could you not have gone back to the journalist and said, who was your second? And just give it to that person. These are internal awards. This is not like the European Player of the Year or the Ballon d'Or, which people can argue even those are meaningless. This is especially meaningless when it's being handed out by the owner organization that you play for. Why would you do this? It's so embarrassing. It so plays into this like stereotype that your organization is utterly inept.
Is there like a point that the journalists are trying to make here, or is this...
The journalists picked it in January and then it was handed off to the FAI. And the FAI have chosen to stick with this.
Ugh.
Now, I've heard some journalists defending it on Irish radio today, saying, oh, well, look, he was the best player. The integrity of the award. Come on. The integrity of the award. It's an in-house thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I do not understand it. I was so embarrassed by it the other day.
It was. It was a punchline around the world.
Yeah. As Declan Rice is tweeting out how proud and honoured he is with three lion head emojis to be called up to Gareth Southgate squad, Ireland are giving him the 2018 Young Player of the Year. I have no problem with his decision at this point. I made my peace with it. Identity is complicated. Anglo-Irish relations in particular. But this is...
Bad optic, as they say.
Jack Grealish got, Youth Player of the Year when he was with Ireland. But he was an active Irish player. He would go on to play more games.
Yeah.
This guy has said, I'm done with you. And he said it for a month. Give it to the next guy.
Yeah.
It's just so... And by the way, in terms of like dealing with this issue, I know it made people mad that the kid took three caps. So the FAI, read the room. Read the room. People are upset. Don't rub their faces in it.
Yeah. You don't give your Girlfriend of the Year award to a girl who broke up with you 7 months ago. Give it to the one that you're dating currently.
It's a good analogy. Question. Right. Go back to your teenage years, pre-Amanda. You're with a girl, you're 16, 17, you're with a girl, right? You're with her for, I will say, 6 or 7 months. So it's a period of time that kind of matters. It's decent length of time.
Yeah.
You've bought her a birthday present and it's really nice, okay? She's broken up with you in the interim.
Oh,
She's not getting that.
Sorry, that's going...
In the gap between then, when you've bought it and she's not getting it.
Uh-uh. I'm with you. Yeah. JJ, my red card is Schalke, which brings us...
Which is German for collapse.
It brings us to this edition of Bad Stat Trivia.
Oh, come on.
We've done it before, and I know how much you hated it, quite frankly.
Because you spring it on me. There's no time for think.
There's
no time for thought.
What, were you going to study?
Come on.
Here we go. Only once in Champions League history has a team won by a larger margin than the 8-goal difference in this one over the two legs. Do you know when that was?
I don't.
Okay, it was when Bayern beat Sporting 12-1 in the 08-09 round of 16.
Wow.
All right, 0-1. This tied the largest margin of victory in an individual knockout match with this club that has actually done it twice, the 7-0. Once again, it's Bayern. They did it against FC Basel in 2012, and they did it against Shakhtar in 2015.
Did not know that. Well, did know that. Didn't think about it.
No, you didn't know it.
I didn't know
it. Let's see. And last but not least, JJ, the 12 total
goals. Joy. You can't wait.
The 12 total goals scored over the two legs is actually just the second highest number of total goals in a knockout stage match. It's happened on two other occasions. 13 goals have been scored. One of those, I already mentioned, the 12-1 Bayern and Sporting. And the other one occurred just last year.
That was Liverpool and Roma.
There you go. I thought I'd give you a nice softball to finish out with. Liverpool.
Yeah, well, those other ones were tricky.
I know.
I wouldn't know those off the top of my head.
Look, no one's mad at you. All right? I mean, it was disappointing.
You're gutted that I didn't go 0-3.
No. Why do you think I slipped that Liverpool-Roma in there? I needed you to save face. Come on, you're the brains on this podcast. If you fail, then what do we have left? Let's see, JJ, we continue now.
Caught offside's man of the match.
What do you got?
Louis van Gaal.
Oh, yeah.
Pay attention to the manager. Louis has decided to hang up his managerial cleats. His clipboard shall be donned no more. Former Manchester United manager Louis van Gaal has retired from football, with England striker Marcus Rashford among those to pay tribute. If anyone owes him a lot, it's Rashford. From £500 a week to £10,000 a week within a month.
Yeah, and I saw Rashford had a nice tweet to Louis van Gaal.
Oh, yeah. Van Gaal did, I'll tell you, in terms of Man United youth, he did a lot more than Jose Mourinho. The Dutchman, 67, handed an 18-year-old Rashford his professional debut. We know this. This is the quotes he gave to VTBL on Monday. I'm a pensioner now. I know I won't.
Oh, my God.
I am a pensioner now. I have no ambition. I don't know why I'm doing an impression when I've got some audio lined up. God. I have no ambition to be technical director or a TV pundit. This is actually lovely. My wife, Truce, gave up her job for me 22 years ago and followed me when I went abroad. I told her I would quit as a coach when I turned 55, but instead kept going until I was 65. She is entitled to have a life with me outside of football. I can say she is very happy. I think I could have worked as a technical director.
That had to be slipped in.
He had to leave.
We get it. You're very smart.
But look, he had a really great career with Ajax, as well as league titles with Barcelona, Bayern Munich. He was a great manager. So yeah. I've put together, his time in England was really fun. It was actually pretty shameful for him. It ended with him, his wife, Truce, found out about his sacking after the FA Cup. She overheard it in the elevator at Wembley, just minutes after they'd won. How classless was that? So when I say it was fun for us to listen to him in press conferences. So I've done a top three. At three, Louis van Gaal uses the United crowd as proof he is doing a good job.
Like my friend is saying, the fans are saying that. Now, the fans are shouting every week, Louis van Gaal's army! Louis van Gaal's army! So also the fans are very satisfied with Louis van Gaal. And my players are also satisfied with me.
His voice is the best. This could easily be at number one. At number two, after a 1-1 draw with Leicester in May 2016, I think it was May, LVG criticises the Foxes' defenders for pulling Fellaini's hair.
When I grab you your hair now, you react also.
Possibly.
Oh, possibly, I do know for sure. Because it's not in the books that somebody has to grab with the hair and then pull it behind.
Yeah.
And only in sex masochism, then it is allowed.
Well, I appreciate you not pulling my hair. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
Sex masochism. All right, don't keep saying that, JJ. Bizarre. And the number one was right at the end of the Manchester United End of Season Club Awards. Louis, who sounded like he had a few, he loved red wine, a few glasses of red wine in him, was invited on stage by presenter Jim Rosenthal to give a resume of the season. Here's the first one, the first part of that resume.
Long-time listeners of this podcast will know these.
Yes, yes.
We go for the second position in the league. What I want to say to you, we are very close. I have seen a lady who plays the saxophone fantastically. Give her a big applause.
I love him.
And Wayne Rooney said we'd go for second, and I said yes.
He's so charismatic. His time was fun. Remember, who was it that he got in the fight with on the touchline? He's on the ground, sprawled out,
squirming
around. Oh, he
was talking to the fourth official,
yeah,
trying to suggest there was a dive.
Oh, my God.
And to illustrate it, he throws himself to the ground.
It was unbelievable. He was fun, man.
Can I direct some people towards an article? I always do this. Mm-hmm. John Bruin, formerly of this parish, wrote an article on The Blizzard about the managers post the two big managers, so post Busby and post Ferguson at Manchester United, and how they fared. So LVG, Frank O'Farrell, Jose Mourinho, guys like that. There is an unbelievable stat in it, and I'll just give it to you right now.
Yeah.
Outside of Ron Atkinson, the only managers to go on and have careers where they win major trophies. He's the only... Ron Atkinson is the only one. Outside of that, no one else goes
to
on.
To do what now?
To go on and win trophies with another club.
After
managing United.
Really?
Yep. Crazy.
That is, yeah.
Staggering.
That's pretty surprising.
Yeah, now that's of the post-Busby, post-Fergie thing. So, yeah, read it. Just Google John Bruin, United managers.
David Moyes, any day now.
I mean, yeah.
Let's see, JJ. I kind of wish we ended on your man of the match. It was much more uplifting.
Oh, God.
Mine is very serious.
Is it grim?
No, it's not grim. It's just very serious. Aaron Lennon, the Burnley winger, has spoken out in the recent past about his battles with depression. You might remember he was actually detained 2 years ago under Britain's Mental Health Act. Now Lennon is doing something about it. He was speaking at the launch of a Burnley in the Community project, which is... reacted to rising levels of depression and suicide among teenagers by funding mental health practitioners in each of the area's secondary schools. The idea is that students can raise problems or talk over anxieties with experts who set them at ease and prevent the situation from worsening. It's a good program. This is from The Guardian. Lennon's talking here. He says, it was a gradual process. I didn't realize I needed help until it was too late. I would tell my friends and family I was okay, but I really wasn't. That's why I think it's brilliant that people are being put into schools, because people who need help can be difficult to spot. They tend to cover it up well. There's a lot of pressure on kids nowadays with social media and camera phones on top of their exams and schoolwork. I don't think I'd want to go through it all again, to be honest. What I would say, though, is that it is okay if you don't feel great all the time, and that talking to people can help. I can really see the point of projects like this, because mental illness is definitely something you can recover from. It's a problem without an easy solution, JJ. We just heard here in the United States, Kyrie Irving of the Celtics was talking, 2 weeks ago about how it's pretty amazing, you know, about just like how much of a bummer. He doesn't talk about like depression necessarily, but he just seems so down and like not enjoying life as a basketball player. And then Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, talked about how stunning it is how many players he talks to that are just unhappy, whether it be the pressures of social media and things like that. And I'm sure that all translates to these high-profile young soccer players who, you know, I don't know. It's very easy to sit here and say they've got a charmed life, that they're millionaires, that, you know, they date beautiful women, that they've got this glamorous lifestyle, they're living in million-dollar homes. But I don't know. Like, I do feel like there is more to it than that. And I'm sure these guys feel uncomfortable. Like, they're aware of all that. And they probably feel uncomfortable sometimes talking about, you know, that their life is not so good, because they know your regular average guy who's paying, you know, too much money for a ticket to watch a team that's not very good. They don't want to hear that. But ultimately, these guys are people. And these problems affect anybody, regardless of what your salary is or your profession is.
I think the first thing to get rid of is the notion that depression, you know, everybody gets sad about things or everybody, but the depression is a clinical thing that can take over your life and affect you in many different ways. And you might even know you have it. It's a genuine thing. And the idea that more money in your bank account or a car or, you know, tickets to the Oscars or some glamorous plane journey or, you know, visiting various countries is a cure for that. It's not. It just isn't. And it's not just Aaron Lennon. Danny Rose spoke at length before the World Cup about it. And these are ordinary people who have an extraordinary skill. That is the only way you can look at it. But at the end of the day, they suffer from the same things we do. And look at Stan Collymore as well. Stan Collymore is a huge advocate for mental health. And he's been absolutely through it. He calls it his battles with the black dog.
Yeah, so, well, and we've seen some of these situations, like with Gary Speed. Some of these situations don't end well.
No, they don't. Justin Faschino, too.
Yeah. So it's important for guys like Aaron Lennon to step out and talk about this openly and let some of these players know. Not just players. This is a community project for kids in schools and things, too. But
well, if Aaron Lennon can have these problems and I have them, then it kind of raises the stigma a little bit.
Yep. So there you go, my friend.
What a podcast.
It really was. A very eventful midweek podcast. The Champions League round of 16 is no more. The quarterfinals, we will know the matchups on Friday. I'm very excited about that. Like we said, the U.S. rosters are out there. I'm very excited for the upcoming friendlies. Good times. Good times to be a soccer fan.
Yeah, some lovely iTunes reviews coming in through.
Oh, really?
Keep those coming through. Some very nice things. Like, you know, some quite lengthy.
Wow.
Well, I'll just give you one quick one.
Okay.
This soccer pod has slowly climbed the ladder above all my other soccer podcasts. We are a slow burner. Mm-hmm. To the point where it is now my clear favorite. I even let it annoy me with episode notifications so I can start listening the second it's out. I could listen to Andrew and JJ bicker at each other all day. Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau have nothing on these two. But look, it doesn't have to be praise. You can say, well,
how dare you say those words? Do not open Pandora's box.
I will keep, yeah, all right.
It must be praised.
If you enjoy the podcast, it's nice. But I would like to say, and I'm not going to go into details on this one, but our listeners have been excellent this year so far.
We are incredibly lucky with having just an awesome group of people that listen to this
show. We have data to prove it, but we're not going down.
And you know, speaking of which, actually, I meant to bring this in here. Somebody a couple weeks ago, I got this, and I keep forgetting to bring it in. Sent us a letter.
Oh my god!
With like drawings of
concept kits.
Yeah, caught offside uniforms. So on the next show, we'll read that out and tweet a photo of the jerseys that they want to make on our behalf.
But like I said, your efforts and your what would you call it? Your febrile passion for listening to the podcast has not gone unnoticed, and I really do appreciate it. All the time you give us.
Febrile is a word for those like myself who were.
I would
sure.
think our fans are frenzied.
They don't know.
Frenzied.
No one knows. They are frenzied. Febrile means. Hey, this was fun, my friend. To you, I say.
Panenka.
Take care.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.